This feast day, the Feast of Christ the King, was moved to the last Sunday of the liturgical year in 1925 by Pope Pius XI to counter the rise in their day of secularism and atheism. By doing this, he emphasized the sovereignty of Christ at the end of the liturgical year, so that when we go into the new year, we are thinking where our focus should be. So is it ironic or providential that as we celebrate or commemorate this feast day 100 years later, we need to focus again on that sovereignty to counter the movements that seek to usurp the reign of Christ, the power of Christ, right here in the United States? You all know what I'm talking about, Christian nationalism. My message's title is a quote from the poet Audre Lorde. I have it as a sticker on my phone to remind me every day that this truth is a truth we have to celebrate on this Sunday. It says, despair is a tool of our enemies, enemies without and enemies within. Today's readings help me at least focus on the characteristics of true kingship that help combat the tones of despair whenever people talk about Christian nationalism or you know, the rise of conservative Christianity that I hear in many, many conversations. The latest time was just this past October. I went back to my seminary alma mater, Union, and heard it in the discussion amongst the alum who were there, who are like just, I mean, I laugh now, but I wasn't laughing then, wringing their hands about how Christianity is being distorted. And I'm scratching my head, so I'm like, what's new about that? I mean, hello, the Crusades, the Inquisition, the way Christianity is used to justify slavery, segregation, how it's being used today to, you know, attack trans people, the gay and lesbian community. So maybe I'm older than most of the people here in this room, you know? I mean, I'm 69. I think most of them graduated when I did or before. So, I mean, like, is this new? But then in an even smaller conversation between me and two other clergy women, one of them just again echoed this despair, and her despair was really heartfelt and heavy. And she just, you know, was almost like kind of throwing up her hands and saying, like, how, you know, how are we gonna prevail against this? I just feel so overwhelmed at times. And kind of was like, I guess, looking for an echo. And I just, like, not to downplay how you're feeling, but nah, I don't go there. And she said, well, how's that possible? And I kind of blinked and said, because God's not dead. God's not dead. It's like, no matter how grim our circumstances are, right? There's a truth that we live because God is not dead. It's stated here in 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verses 7 through 12. But we have this treasure in clay jars, so that it may be made clear that this extraordinary power belongs to God and does not come from us. We are afflicted in every way, but not crushed, perplexed, but not driven to despair, persecuted, but not forsaken, struck down, but not destroyed, always carrying around in the body the death of Jesus, so that the life of Jesus may also be made visible in our bodies. For we who are living are always being handed over to death for Jesus' sake, so that the life of Jesus may also be made visible in our mortal flesh. So death is at work in us, but life in you. There is a power at work in the world that comes not from us, but from that which is larger than us. Despair is not of God. Despair is not of God. Just like guilt is not of God. In the midst of the latest tumult that's besetting our country, this morning's scriptures tell us that this must be our focus. Psalm 46 reminds us, where our help lies. I mean, okay, Jessica? Joyce. Well, sorry, I knew it started with a J. in her time with young disciples, pointed it up. Psalm 46 reminds us that in verses 1, 7, and 11, that God is present, and in that presence is protection, even when chaos surrounds us and evil temporarily triumphs. In verses 2 and 3, we learn we don't have to be afraid of the truth of climate change that continues to manifest itself at an alarming rate. You know, it's like, try not to tell people who tell me climate change is a hoax to say, I told you so. It also reminds us that in the craziness being expressed in the politics of our day, that God is still speaking to us. The same way God spoke to the psalmist in the psalmist day, to those who lived through the craziness of the Red Scares of the 1920s, of the red baiting of the 1950s in the McCarthy era, of the lies being told in the 60s by the Johnson administration, right? The nonsense and craziness done in the 70s under Nixon and Watergate. I mean, like, deja vu. None of this is new. And Psalm 46 is saying, and hey, through it all, guess who has continued to be there with you? The theme of this feast day is not that a promise is waiting to be fulfilled. Christ is the King, and the strength and courage and agency we receive from that fact is ours to be used here and now. So let me read to you the gospel lesson again. When they came to the place that is called the skull, they crucified Jesus there with the criminals, one on his right, one on his left. Then Jesus said, Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing. And they cast lots to divide his clothing. And the people stood by watching, but the leaders scoffed at him, saying, He saved others. Let him save himself if he is the Messiah of God, his chosen one. And the soldiers also mocked him, coming up and offering him sour wine and saying, Well, if you're the king of the Jews, save yourself. There was also an inscription over him, This is the king of the Jews. One of the criminals who were hanged there kept deriding him and saying, Are you not the Messiah? Save yourself and us. But the other rebuked him, saying, Do you not fear God, since you are under the same sentence of condemnation? And we indeed have been condemned justly, for we're getting what we deserve for our deeds. But this man has done nothing. Nothing wrong. Then he said, Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom. And he replied, Truly, I tell you, today you will be with me in paradise. In these four verses, we get three ways that show that are the characteristics of the kingdom that Jesus presides over. We receive in verse 34 the compassion that Jesus exhibits. Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing. When we watch people doing things that hurt others, it's hard not to be enraged and say they know what they're doing, but you know, how many of them are acting out on their own hurts and their own fears? You know, I mean, how their own wounding. That cliche, hurt people hurt people. And we, in order not to get caught up in that hurting cycle, have to have the compassion shown here by Jesus. The second is Jesus' ability to be what Murray Bowen and systems theory call a non-anxious presence in the face of the tauntings and the goadings that he receives from the leaders, from the soldiers, and from the criminal on the left who's like, hey, the Son of God is over here. I want him to help me too. I mean, when somebody says something to you that you know is wrong, and you know you have the proof to put them in their place, how many of us can resist the urge to get in their face and tell them what's what? I mean, it is tough. You just want to grind them in the ground with the truth, right? But that's not Christ's way, right? That's not Christ's way. It's like, I don't need to prove to you who I am or whose I am. Go ahead. Do what you want. The old spiritual says, you can talk about me just as much as you please. I'll talk about you when I get on my knees. And then the third is the peace that Jesus models when he talks to that thief on his right. It's like, yeah, but listen, times are tough now, we're gonna die, but today, you'll be with me in paradise. Today, not tomorrow, not in a future time, today, it'll all be over. We'll be done with the troubles of. I read that and just marveled that what Jesus was modeling was the peace that passes all understanding, that Philippians guarantees us will guard our heart and our mind. But we can only get if we recognize that it's Christ who's king, that it comes from Christ as our king, not from us. In the exchange between the thief and Jesus, we should take that exchange as our guide. And because, like I said, the word today is prominent in that verse, we know that Jesus is in his kingdom, that Jesus has remembered us, and that because he has, today, right now, here in this place, we are with him in paradise. I mean, this account on the cross has been interpreted so literally for so long, right? That this is about life after death. A little aside, how is it we can like claim that promise for ourselves? Any of us, were any of us hanging on that cross? And Jesus saying to us, this day you will be in paradise? It's like, how do we appropriate that promise given to a thief to us 2,000 years later? No, this is not about getting an insurance policy to keep us out of hell. In fact, to me, it's a diploma, you know, or a certification, or a training that says, when you accept that Jesus is your king, you have power and strength now to continue his mission as laid out for us in John 3:17. For God sent not his son into the world to condemn the world, but that through him the world might be saved. Our acts of justice and mercy and love and kindness are extending that salvation to the world. You know, one of the most wonderful things that has happened when in the face of the cutting off of SNAP benefits is how there just seems to be this groundswell of generosity for people to make sure others have food. I've driven down a golf course, and there are stores and businesses, and there's tables in front of them with signs that say, free food, help yourself. It was demonstrated by Jimmy Kimmel, right? Nationally, says, we're using our parking lot to become almost like a grocery store. If you have something you want to donate, bring it on down so people can come and help themselves. Nobody should go hungry. Is that not a wonderful example of the compassion and love and care and peace that Jesus exhibited here on the cross for us to follow? That's why despair is a tool of our enemies that wants us to give up, that wants us to think we're helpless, that wants us to think there's nothing we can do, or tries to diminish the impact of what we do. Those tables with those placards saying, free food, help yourself, is impacting somebody's family tonight. Some child, because their parent was able to go past that table, would not go hungry that day. I opened us with a mighty fortress as our God, because there is a way that the confidence of that hymn reminds us, because Christ is King, we don't have to fear anyone. And so long as we keep our focus on Christ as the King, we don't slip into Christian nationalism or Christian triumphalism or any kind of rationalization or justification that says, I can do whatever I want because God is on my side. No, we cannot. God is not on the side of those who are selfish. God is not on the side of those who are acting on their woundedness. God loves them, but God ain't on their side. So, when we sing those words, when we read that encounter on the cross, today of all days, I'm hoping that we take that confidence of Christ as King and Christ's victory out of this old year and into the... I hope that today we claim that Christ is not just the King of the Jews, but he's my King. And that we have the power to help save the world because of the love of God. And so I'm asking you to think and sing today those words with confidence. Amen.